VA's IT infrastructure reorganization hearing before the House Veterans Affairs Full Committee will come to order September 14, 2005. This hearing will provide the committee with an update on the Department of Veterans Affairs Information Technology Infrastructure Reorganization, learn more about the role of the Chief Information Officer within that department. VA's IT modernization efforts go back at least 20 years to 1985, where it was the policy of the Veterans Administration to, quote, better serve the veteran through modern technology, end quote. Despite 20 years of, quote, modernizing, this committee has authorized and Congress has appropriated roughly $10 billion over the last decade alone for VA IT spending. This is probably a very conservative figure, as it historically the VA has included funding for IT in general administration accounts of each of the Veterans Health Administration and the VA's Benefits Administration and the National Cemetery Administration. Since coming to Congress in 1993, I've witnessed this committee struggle with VA's inability to adequately manage its IT funding and IT modernization efforts. The Subcommittee on Oversight and Investigations has conducted six separate hearings on VA IT and related issues since 2000, when I chaired the subcommittee. And Ms. Kuntz, I see you so often, I feel like you're part of my family. While there have been significant improvements in VA's IT modernization efforts, the improvements have come at a significant cost to our veterans and the system. $600 million plus for a decade of VetsNet, the automated compensation and pension claims processing system that has still not been implemented in 10 years. $342 million, the core FLS, the failed financial management system. We have $300 million for the HR links, the failed automated personnel system. $485 million annually to maintain VISTA, VA's 25-year-old medical information system. In FY 2004 and FY 2005, VA received $1.4 and $1.6 billion, respectively, for IT funding. For the FY 2006, VA's projected spending for IT will be approximately $2.2 billion. This lack of accountability in VA IT spending, I believe, must stop. And that's the reason why there was such a reduction in the overall budgetary in your budget request for IT. Not only did I recommend, it was supported then by the Budget Committee, by the Appropriations, and also by the Senate. So somewhere in here, we need to come to a meeting of the minds and to figure out how we're going to do this. Last year, VA was able to testify before the committee, and they were, quote, well underway with an enterprise architecture that aims to align the business with the information technology plans, goals, and efforts, end quote. However, I am concerned that the structure in place lacks the authority to provide better service to the veteran. Today, we will hear testimony from Gartner Consulting, VA's own private IT consultant, on what the VA needs to do more effectively to reorganize itself and at what cost would be of letting the bureaucracy maintain the status quo. That's why myself, along with Ranking Member Lane Evans and other distinguished members of this committee, we will soon be introducing legislation that will mandate the Department of Veterans Affairs to empower the Chief Information Officer with authority over resources, budget, and personnel related to the information technology of the department. I'm holding this hearing, Lane and I are, for the purpose of our legislation is in draft form. Not shared it with anyone. We've come into a comfort zone of where we are with the legislation. But we're going to ask a lot of series of questions today because we want to make sure what we're about to do, we do it correctly. Because we also then want that to be leveraged into other departments of the federal government. So we want to walk cautiously and carefully as we do this correctly. So I am really pleased that the GAO is here to testify. We have you as the first panel for a reason, because you're experts in your field. CRS, all your vast knowledge and expertise, Ms. Kuntz, this survey that you have done, and also with an outside consultant, of all the CIOs and how things are looking out there, you've spoken to so many. And so they've shared with you their successes, and they shared with you their challenges. And so we want to create the model that can be leveraged. Okay? With that, I'll yield to the ranking member for any comments that he may have.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also want to praise the VA workers and the crisis response team for safely and swiftly evacuating so many of the veterans, staff, and their families out of the Gulf Coast. But I also recommend VA workers for their current efforts to keep veterans out of the path of Ophelia. I'm proud of the VA staff here in the committee. I've introduced three bills to help veterans and their families to get their medical needs and their shelter after the storm. I hope we can mark up these three bills sometime in the near future. As for information technology management, I think we can see this issue in the same way. It is nice to be on the same sheet of music on this. 4 years, major IT, pronounced IT projects at the VA have failed or suffered costly delays. The committee and the subcommittee, which have had a significant number of hearings on VA mismanagement of IT, we've got to change that. Mr. Chairman, we both have consistently pushed for accountability and change. We now have an environment where any successes in the IT area are overshadowed by some well-publicized failure in IT someplace else. Let us hear testimony for the current status of IT management and the facilitated any need change. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. I join you in your spirit and compliments to the VA in their rapid response. America doesn't get to hear about it, but Lane and I and members of this committee are very proud of the VA employees and your direction and how you responded to the crisis in the Gulf Coast and continue to respond and help as part of our national response. Here on Capitol Hill also, there are different committees that are examining Katrina. And so, Secretary Mansfield, if you know of things that you need to do within your agencies that you cannot do right presently within your executive authorities, let us know. I'm not interested in doing theater or do something stuff that we get here in Washington that really is duplicative or multiplicious. So if it's outside that, please be in touch with Mr. Evans and I. Mr. Bilirakis?
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I really appreciate both you and Mr. Evans giving the accolades where they're deserved. The VA, it's certainly this on this particular issue, they're far from perfect. There's an awful lot of work that needs to be done, and there are a lot of frustrations in the sense that we haven't been able to get IT to the point that it should be after all these many years and the creation of the CIO quite a few years ago. But at the same time, they're probably heads over heels above most of the departments in the government in terms of IT. And they've proven that time and time again. They certainly proved it in New York City in 9/11. They proved it certainly in Katrina. And so they've done really good work. And what we want to do is to help you to improve upon that. So it's critical in the memo here, which basically says potential legislative solutions that the chairman mentioned are very important. So we want to be here to help you, but we're not going to be able to help you to really get this thing going the way it should be unless you're cooperative and unless you're being, frankly, very frank and blunt with us in terms of what needs to be done. In addition to money, it's always money, of course, and that's the unfortunate thing. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Bilirakis, we appreciate your leadership and the continued work on IT from your subcommittee. Mr. Michaud, opening statement.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I too want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, Ranking Member Evans, for having this hearing today. Since this is our first hearing after Katrina, I too want to take this opportunity to praise the VA employees who kept our veterans, staff, and others safe during the storm. I understand that staff did an amazing job in evacuating the very sick veterans, after the storm and flooding. I applaud the VA frontline workers for reaching out to the veterans to make sure that the storm will not disrupt the delivery of needed medication and benefits. Those employees and the others who have not yet been found, our thoughts and prayers are definitely with them, and I hope that they are safe. I understand that the crisis response team is making sure that VA IT system is working and that benefit files and medical data is secure. So I look forward to hearing your testimony here today. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Michaud. The first panel, I'll now recognize Mr. Jeff Seifert, is the analyst in Information Science and Technology Policy, Resources Science, and Industry Division of Congressional Research Service. Next, we'll hear from Ms. Linda Kuntz. She is the Director, Information Management Issues, U.S. Government Accountability Office. Then we'll hear from Mr. Michael Peterson, Managing Vice President of Gartner Consulting. Do each of you have a written statement? All three have nodded their heads in the affirmative. Your complete written statements will be made part of the official hearing record. I will ask members to hold all their questions until the panel has testified. We will move under the five-minute rule. And Mr. Seifert, you are now recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the invitation to appear before you today to offer testimony on the background and role of chief information officers in the federal government. While the specific topic of today's hearing is on the responsibilities and authority entrusted to the Office of the Chief Information Officer at the Department of Veterans Affairs, my comments today will focus on the performance and challenges of federal CIOs more generally. As you are aware, the Congressional Research Service does not take a position on issues or legislation. The federal government spends more than $60 billion annually on information technology goods and services, reflecting how technology has become integrated into nearly all government processes. Federal CIOs are on the front lines in implementing a wide range of e-government and homeland security initiatives. These include initiatives to develop a federal enterprise architecture, improve information security, and identify opportunities to facilitate information sharing. While CIOs were once commonly thought of as technocrats, they are now being called upon not only for their technological expertise, but also to provide strategic leadership in the areas of policy, budget, and contract oversight. Federal CIOs serve as change agents for business modernization and transformation. They must possess strong management, leadership, and communication skills. The CIO's relationship with top-level department decision makers can also be critical to successfully implementing IT and e-government initiatives. Inherent to the nature of their responsibilities, CIOs need to look at the departments horizontally across the department rather than vertically, such as at a single program or function. Likewise, there is a need to be able to exercise control over resources horizontally, in part to break down the so-called stovepipes and islands of automation that are created when resources and programs are developed individually. However, this difference in perspectives can frequently put the CIO at odds with his or her counterparts, such as the program managers, whose responsibilities may foster a more vertical view of the department and its assets. For example, whereas CIOs may recommend adopting a standardized software platform for desktop computers in order to facilitate interoperability and lower costs, program managers may oppose this approach on the basis that it reduces their decision-making authority to procure and develop assets used in the delivery of services. This clash of perspectives exemplifies why the biggest challenges facing federal CIOs are not technical, but instead organizational. Decentralized organizations can be especially challenging for CIOs, whose primary role includes coordinating resources and personnel in an effort to affect transformation of the organization. While having access to or direct participation in decisions regarding funding issues and allocation of resources is important, simply having a seat at the management table may not be sufficient if other parts of the department can act autonomously in areas that either undermine or mitigate attempts by the CIO to develop enterprise-wide standards. Consolidating authority over IT resources and clarifying who is accountable for specific functions is one approach that some departments have begun using to address these challenges. For example, earlier this year, the Federal Bureau of Investigation announced it was implementing a new strategic approach to information technology. Specifically, the strategy includes centralizing management of FBI IT resources under the FBI's Office of the Chief Information Officer, creating several IT governance boards, implementing an IT investment strategy and an enterprise architecture, and granting the CIO budgetary authority over all FBI IT funds. However, efforts to consolidate IT investment management decisions can be hindered at the outset by a lack of comprehensive accounting of a department's IT resources and responsibilities. For example, in a March 2005 report, the Inspector General at the Department of Transportation found that the consolidation of department-wide IT responsibilities begun in FY 2003 was not accompanied by a comparable level of budgetary and contract services oversight. Among the problems specifically identified in consolidating CIO control over systems originally maintained by DOT's 11 individual operating administrations was an incommensurate transfer of project management and budgetary authority, as well as duplicative funding requests made by the CIO's office and the operating administrations. In closing, information technology management has been a longstanding challenge for the federal government. The general problems facing the Department of Veterans Affairs are not unlike those facing CIOs and other executive branch departments and agencies. However, the challenge of harmonizing the acquisition, development, and maintenance of information resources across the department, including its three major subcomponents, the Veterans Benefits Administration, the Veterans Health Administration, and the National Cemetery Administration, are considerable. By enhancing the authority of the department's CIO, the Department of Veterans Affairs may be able to better address some of its information technology management challenges in the future. Thank you for your attention. I welcome any questions.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I am pleased to be here at today's hearing on the reorganization of VA's CIO office. At your request, I will be discussing our previous work on the role of the CIOs in the federal government generally, and at VA in particular, to provide background and perspective for your consideration. As you know, the CIO position was established by the Clinger-Cohen Act in 1996. Through this law and others, the Congress has expressed the view that the federal CIO should play a central role in managing information and technology within federal agencies. In this way, the CIO can help ensure that agencies manage their information functions in a coordinated and integrated fashion and thus improve the efficiency and effectiveness of government programs and operations. CIOs have a wide range of responsibilities. For a review of federal CIOs that we reported in 2004, we identified 13 major areas of CIO responsibility that were either statutory requirements or critical to effective information and technology management. Our review showed that CIOs were generally responsible for these key areas, although not all CIOs were completely responsible for all areas. To give a few examples, all the CIOs were responsible for enterprise architecture and information security, and more than half were responsible for systems acquisition and major e-government initiatives. In certain areas, such as system acquisition and statistical policy, it was common for CIOs to share responsibilities with others. We have also developed guidance on the effective use of CIOs in which we describe characteristics of organizations that contribute to CIO success. First, successful CIOs work with supportive senior executives who embrace the central role of technology in accomplishing mission objectives and include the CIO as a full participant in senior executive decision making. Second, successful CIOs have legitimate and influential roles in leading top managers to apply IT to business problems and needs. Placement of the position at an executive management level in the organization is important, but in addition, CIOs earn credibility and produce results by establishing effective working relationships with business unit heads. Third, successful CIOs structure their organizations in ways that reflect a clear understanding of business and mission needs. Along with knowledge of business processes, market trends, internal legacy structures and available IT skills, this understanding is necessary that the CIO's office is aligned to best serve agency needs. To achieve this kind of success, CIOs face a number of challenges. In our 2004 review, CIOs most frequently cited two in particular. First, implementing effective IT management practices. A little over 80% of the CIOs reported that they face one or more challenges related to this area. This is not surprising given the government's recognized difficulties in IT management. We have issued numerous reports describing challenges in the specific management areas that the CIOs cited most frequently: information security, enterprise architecture, investment management, and e-government. Second, obtaining sufficient and relevant resources. Virtually all agency CIOs cited resources both in dollars and staff as major challenges. Two other commonly cited challenges were communication and collaboration, both internal and external, and managing change. CIOs study the challenge of establishing effective communications with the business part of their organizations, as well as sharing information with partners and influencing OMB and the Congress. And of course, implementing major IT changes can involve not only technical risks, but also risks associated with people and organizational culture. At VA, the CIO position and IT management have received increased attention in recent years. The department went for 2.5 years after the passage of the Clinger-Cohen Act without a CIO. For 2 years after that, the CIO role was held by an executive who also had other major responsibilities. The department then had an acting CIO for a year, and in August 2004, it appointed a full-time permanent CIO. Since then, the department proposed further strengthening the CIO position and centralizing IT management, recognizing that aspects of the VA computing environment were particularly challenging and required substantial management attention. In particular, the department information systems and services were highly decentralized, and a huge proportion of the department IT budget was controlled by the VA's administrations and staff offices. To address these challenges, the Secretary issued a memo in 2002 announcing that IT functions, programs, and funding would be centralized under the department-level CIO. In our view, this alignment held promise for improving IT accountability and enabling the department to accomplish its mission. The additional oversight afforded by the CIO could have a significant impact on the department's ability to more effectively account for and manage the approximately $2.1 billion in planned IT spending. Mr. Chairman, that completes my statement. I would be happy to answer questions at the appropriate time.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to participate in today's hearing regarding the Department of Veteran Affairs IT reorganization. My name is Michael Peterson. I'm the Managing Vice President within the Consulting Division at Gartner, a provider of research and analysis on the global IT industry. Unlike our competitors, we do not offer implementation services that would compromise our independence and objectivity. It is this objectivity that was the basis for us being selected to assess whether the VA's IT personnel assets are appropriately aligned to efficiently deliver world-class IT program management, operational support, and systems design and development services. I was the lead consultant and subject matter expert on this assessment and directed all activities. When looking at the VA today, we documented several issues that must be addressed for the VA to achieve its objective of efficiently delivering world-class IT services in a veteran-centric model. Our principal finding is there is excessive duplication of IT assets defined as people, process, and technologies across the VA IT organizations. This approach leads to inefficiencies in IT delivery and creates significant barriers to improve performance at a VA-wide level. Each IT group, and there are many, has its own unique, at times competing, at times complementary, approach to delivering IT services. Different approaches to work means working together on common objectives that much more difficult. It also costs more to operate such a fragmented IT organization and has the potential to leave unmanaged risk within its major programs. There are few incentives or mechanisms in place for these multiple IT groups to work together. In fact, the culture fosters a go-it-alone approach, which forces the IT staff to engage their informal personal network when required to work across organizational boundaries. To resolve these issues, we recommended changes at the VA. We recommended significant change in the underlying processes that make organizations work, as noted in my written testimony. As organizational structure is the most visible aspect of organizations, it is worthy of additional discussion. Several organizational structures were analyzed to resolve the issues uncovered within the VA. Two organizational structures had the greatest potential for application at the VA. The first is an organizational structure where technology operations, such as data centers and networks, are controlled by a single group with all business applications developed and supported by each business line, whether medical care, pension, housing, or finance. We called this the federated model. The second is an organizational structure where all VA IT is organized into a single entity reporting to a chief information officer. We called this the centralized model. Each has its own risks and benefits. The primary benefit of the federated model is it allows business leaders to develop the applications unique to their missions while achieving economies of scale by managing the VA infrastructure through the centralized function. While we did not undertake a cost analysis, our organization does extensive IT cost modeling regarding savings potential. We estimate the implementing the federated model will reduce the annual IT run rate by approximately $207 million within 5 years. However, this comes with risk to the VA. The VA will struggle to attain in a timely manner its one VA mission objectives because of its culture, unaligned investment priorities between and within administrations, and differences in technology and process, which hinders efforts to create veteran-centric systems. In contrast to this approach, the centralized organizational model provides the greatest opportunity to successfully execute one VA mission objectives in a timely manner. Like the federated model, it achieves economies of scale, but will also allow for rapidly maturing the IT investment management process to better deliver its major IT programs. We estimate potential savings from this centralized option to be approximately $345 million in annual run rate reduction within 5 years. The potential risk from implementing the centralized option is significant. It is the big bang. But both the centralized and federated options are viable organizational structures to achieve one VA mission objectives. However, it is our recommendation that the VA pursue the centralization option and aggressively manage the risk to maximize cost-saving opportunity and reduce program risk. Let me clearly state the organizational change is hard work. If not done properly, it places the entire organization at risk. Many examples exist where change efforts were not conducted properly. Whether computerized physician order entry system at Cedars-Sinai or financial management system at the VA itself, organizational change requires extensive planning, executive commitment, and a relentless focus on the details. The whole organization must see the need for change, understand how change will occur, and participate in the change efforts. If it embarks on any change effort, the VA must have, one, its entire leadership team dedicated to the effort, visible in its execution, and held accountable for its results. Two, fast-track budgeting and personnel change authority for its leaders to act quickly. And three, use outside experts to guide, track, and report on its performance against plan. While it has risk, the payoff can be substantial improvement in IT performance at the VA. Mr. Chairman, this concludes my statement. Thank you again for the opportunity to discuss an important matter for our veterans. I'll answer any questions at this time.
Thank you very much, the three of you, for your testimony, your work, and that of your staffs. So please extend that to them. Let me ask Mr. Peterson, the credibility that you bring to this, being one of the top companies in the world in what you do, are you aware of any organization in the private sector that's like how the VA is presently operating its IT? Is there anyone out there?
There is no one out there, sir. The profit motive of the commercial sector drives a natural cost reduction orientation and an investment oversight mentality. So I know of no other organizations like that.
So as Congress has been asking the VA to act more like a business, this effort to bring to streamline or bring a centralization to the CIO would place us in greater stead with modern business practices.
Yes, sir. If I could add, there are the organization as a whole, the agencies, are well operating. I want to make that clear. And there is a tremendous desire for the staff to serve the veteran. And it's our belief that there are efforts underway that have had small pockets of success. Austin Automation Center was a good example that we found where they had defined how they work in a very detailed way. They talked about the costs of their services back through the franchise fund, and we found that a very effective model. We applaud their efforts. It's the cost that they would, the recovery or the price, if you will, that they charge the administration, are comparable to the outside services. So there are efforts underway throughout the organization to drive towards that more commercial-oriented practice. It's just not on its as an organization as a whole.
All right. Ms. Kuntz, in your written statement, you indicated that the Clinger-Cohen Act of 1996 mandated federal departments to establish the position of CIO. However, the VA did not appoint a permanent CIO position until August of 2001. What other federal departments, if any, requested and received OMB waivers for appointing a permanent CIO?
I know of no department that has a waiver for establishing a CIO. I don't know of any mechanism either, excuse me, that would allow a agency to go without a CIO. The law requires that they have a CIO and that the CIO report to the agency head.
Also, in your written statement, you indicated that GAO conducted a review of the relationships of CIOs and agency heads in 23 different agencies. You further indicated the vast majority of these CIOs reported directly to the agency head. Of the five largest federal agencies in terms of budget outlays, what is the reporting relationship for the CIO?
Of the five largest agencies that we looked at based on discretionary spending, and that would be Defense, Health and Human Services, Education, State, and VA. Four of the five, including VA, at the time we did our review, which was in early 2004, the CIO reported directly to the agency head. Only HHS did not at that time.
Also, in your written statement, you indicated that virtually all agency CIOs cite resources, both in dollars and in staff, as a major challenge in effective IT management. Mm-hmm. What specific challenges do you believe the VA CIO must overcome in order for this position to effectively manage VA IT?
I think that the primary thing that the CIO needs, there's two things that I think that are most important for the CIO to have in order to be successful. And the first of that is obviously that the CIO has to have the support of the secretary. Without management support, the CIO cannot be effective. Secondly, I think that it's critical that the CIO be as a participant in an investment management process that's established and mature at the agency that allows the senior management to come together and make decisions on proposed investments and then oversee those investments over time. And as part of that process, it's absolutely critical that the CIO be able to veto any proposed investment that is not consistent, for example, with the enterprise architecture, that's not consistent with standards, including network standards, or with other security requirements.
Mr. Seifert, Mr. Peterson, do you have an opinion based on Mrs. Kuhn's statement that she just made? Do you concur or non-concur?
I'd agree that the investment management and that control is critical for future investment planning and success.
Well, as you know, CRS does not take a position on it or express.
You have a personal opinion of what you just heard Ms. Kuntz say.
Well, I'm not allowed to express a personal opinion, but I would say that
hypothetical
evidence suggests that this is very important to the successful function of the department.
That counts. Well, Mr. Evans and I and others on this committee believe in line and budget authority for this CIO position. So I'm going to go right to the heart of the question. If we're to deliver line and budget authority to the CIO, give us your positives and negatives that you would foresee that action being taken. And then I'll yield to Mr. Evans.
Well, some potential positives are that the CIO would gain control over all the IT resources within the department and be able to coordinate this in a better fashion, perhaps being able to better execute an enterprise architecture plan. Potential drawbacks are Department of the VA size is fairly complex, and it would be hard to imagine any one person being able to honestly understand every nuance that's required for every department or every function. So it is possible that he or she may not be able to capture every little piece of that and may inadvertently overlook something.
Similarly, I think that if you centralize the funding under the CIO, certainly the CIO gains control over the expenditure of those funds, and in that way can ensure that that investments that are made are consistent with the enterprise architecture and standards and security requirements, et cetera, and that's an important thing. My concern in addition to the scope issue that I think that Mr. Seifert just mentioned, is that it removes the funds from the business areas. And it's very important, if not critical, that information systems arise from identified business needs. And that's critical to any successful systems development effort. So removing that money from the business does run its own set of risks. It also puts the business in a position where they don't have the investment in the systems development effort anymore because it's not their money.
I'd agree with that. The idea of bringing accountability is critical. What you want to guard against, and you'll have that if you bring that to the single point in the CIO, what you need to guard against is that budget flows for other purposes manifest themselves back into IT. You need to guard against that. And you need those executives, those business leaders, back at the table to guide investment decisions. It should not be the CIO deciding where investments go, right? They should manage it, get the business to decide where the money should go, what the requirements are, and acceptance of those systems they build. That's where accountability lies on the business. On the CIO side, is build towards that spec. And that's where that the investment management process can be very effective.
Mr. Peterson, that's where we'd like to go. Mr. Evans, you're recognized.
Mr. Peterson, could you describe the safeguards necessary to prevent the so-called federated option from just deteriorating to what you described as a status quo if it were to encounter bureaucratic inertia or resistance? Can you tell us what those safeguards would have to be?
There would be several that I could identify that clearly the idea of where money, people, and assets find themselves is going to be a one element. Policy alone won't protect that because the complexity of the organization is so broad. The way money flows through the organization is so complex. IT spend is very difficult right now to control. So for the federated model to be successful, there must be all three of those aspects. So the technology, the people, and the budget authority for those assets must move. And that will prevent itself from at least the broad, the very significant change back to the status quo. But also the good change management requires all members of the organization to be bought into it and lead that effort. This is not a strike of a pen activity. We've laid out that this is a long-term plan. It's hard work. It's hard work for the executive team. This is not something that's delegated. The executive team must be critically involved with this and be held accountable for what progress is being made. Sir, does that help?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Bilirakis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I recently returned from a two-day visit, and you don't get much in 2 days, I guess, to Estonia. Now, here is a country which just a few years ago was behind the Iron Curtain. Their IT is unbelievable. Everybody in the country, I think, or virtually everybody in the country, certainly there must be some exceptions, although I understand there probably aren't, pay all their bills through electronically. Everything is done electronically. Their cabinet, if I can call them that, that took us into a room where the cabinet sits, and they all have a computer right at their particular location. Everything is done electronically. Smaller country, to be sure. But in no time at all, they're well past us when it comes to something like this. You know, it seems to me, from what Ms. Kunz said in her testimony here, that certainly the VA did not take Klinger-Cohen seriously when they handled the CIO position the way that they did, the time that it took to even put it into place, and then it was a part-time job, and functions were divided, and then 1 year with an acting CIO, then finally in August of 2001 appointed a full-time permanent CIO. Didn't even take it seriously, so we passed these laws up here, and maybe it's our fault that we don't follow through adequately and have the all proper oversight. But in my time remaining, Ms. Kunz, you mentioned the challenges, and you mentioned the lack, the implementing and practices. I'm just paraphrasing you mentioned obtaining relevant resources. I guess there's always that. And then the word collaboration, et cetera, everything related to collaboration. Why are these still challenges after so many years? And can you, you must have details when you research something like this, and the GAO does such a great job. You must have details, specific instances which lead you to these conclusions. Can you sort of expand upon that? Go into these three challenges, particularly the top two that you mentioned, the implementing and the relevant resources, and sort of go into some details for us. You know, we want to be able to picture this, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I understand. I will confess that we have lots of details because we're GAO, I'm not sure that I have all of them at my fingertips.
Well, I don't want all of them.
But I will provide what I can. We have done an awful lot of work over the years about IT management practices, and in fact, that's one of the main, our main lines of work, and that's to look at things like. By IT management practice, as I mean having enterprise architectures in place. I mean having a robust investment management process in place that will, again, like I said before, bring together the right people to make decisions about IT investments and to not only make the right decisions, but then continue to follow them over time. And also, we've done a huge body of work on security. As you know from the annual reporting of agencies, there are many difficulties in these areas. Many of our reports over the years point to the need to strengthen all these management areas, and we, continue to work on that. At VA specifically, I think one of the things that has been a thread in the work that we have done, and I think you would find this as other agencies as well, it is rarely the technology that is the big insurmountable problem. It's putting the right management practices in place to make things successful.
That's not the resources, the mechanical resources, if you will. It's the, yeah.
Exactly. It's a matter of having the right institutional processes in place. It's a matter of having accountability. It's a matter of following disciplined processes in terms of building your systems. And those sound very simple, but yes, those are challenges. They have been challenges for a long time. This is very difficult. Much of what's being done at the VA is very difficult. I think we can't
we can't
ignore that.
It comes down to people and personalities, and yeah, the big problem in government and maybe in life in general, I guess, is what turf, jurisdiction, power, that sort of thing. Is that what we're really talking about?
I think that may be an issue. I can't say as I've studied it for sure, but the reason that we support the idea of having these institutional processes in place is that if you have these strong institutional processes, they sort of transcend all those kinds of issues. They transcend changes in personnel, which happen all the time. They transcend personalities. They transcend turf, and that's why we continue to try to underscore the importance of having them.
Well, and it's critical, obviously, that we not do anything here in this legislation that's being talked about and really heavily thought out to hurt things. We don't want to make things worse. And I'm not really sure, and I haven't even talked to the staff about it, what kind of cooperation they're getting from the VA, how much they've really even gone to the VA for their inputs on it and that sort of thing. And that's something, of course, that we should be concerned with here. It's frustrating. We had a round robin in this room here a while back where we're trying to get the VA to cooperate with the DOD in terms of exchange of medical information, interoperability. It's just frustrating. The VA has gone, I think, a lot further, obviously, and they've already been commended by us, and well, they should be. But if we can't get it done in the VA, which is just the one department, I don't know what are we going to be thinking about transferring it over and working with the with the DOD, which is so very, very important, particularly in a war such as we're going through right now, where these people, you know, will the transition, if you will, from the DOD into the VA and the transfer of records that should take place adequately and things of that nature. It's frustrating. And an awful lot of rhetoric. The bill was passed back in 1997, I believe, something like that, and here we are in 2005, and we're still not there. I don't know. I know we change. There's changes up here all the time, and so you have a lack of stability maybe, and then obviously in the departments and in the agencies they have big changes and whatnot, so you have a lack of stability. So it's a little more difficult, Mr. Peterson, than it would be, I guess, in the private sector, mainly for those reasons. But when it comes to the things like turf and whatnot, which stick their ugly head in the way, that upsets the hell out of me. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Michaud?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Many of the problems when you look at the IT system at VHA can be linked, I think, to the failure to involve line workers. In some cases I've been told about, for example, the core FLS system failed to adequately understand the needs to supply staff and others in ordering basic hospital resources, and as a result, surgeries had to be postponed due to lack of surgical kits. And there are other situations such as this. My question is, under the different IT reorganization option, how can the VA best ensure that the end user, the frontline nurse, doctor, medical technician, and others will have a meaningful involvement in identifying and selecting the IT system that will help them deliver the high-quality care that they have to deliver? It's one thing to sit in an office and see what might be good for a system, but it's another thing to actually be out there having to use that system and knowing what they need. So what the involvement is being done to ensure that end users have a say in this?
Clearly, sir, the idea of defining the requirements, defining that need is the critical element for that whole investment process. This is not a central, there's no effort or desire to say we will build it and they will come. It is clearly the role for the practitioners themselves, the consumer of those services, to define what they need with the sufficient clarity that people can build it, but also they have to accept what comes back. And if it's not accepted, they have to say why it's not accepted. And that's how the business and the technology work well together to define that. Where those problems emerged, they typically hadn't defined requirements sufficiently in detail. They hadn't set up the change process of when it is a change, how will the new organization absorb that new system? Will work? Will they be doing things differently? How differently? And has the business leader helped lead that effort? If it comes from the technology group, these typically fail.
In what process do you envision that happening? Clearly, you might go to one area, just ask one or two, but it might be different in different regions around the country. I mean, how are you going to ensure that the end users will have adequate input into the process?
That's large organizations have defined it. I go back to earlier when I said a principal challenge for the organization is defining how they work. They haven't sat down to say how those interactions should occur so that you can capture and manage that risk. If there are differences for the healthcare system within each visit or within each hospital, we need to define that and we understand it. That will be a cost to the system implementation and how the system will be built. But if that isn't well established up front, how it gets delivered in the back, that will create a huge problem.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Peterson, who are some of Gartner Consulting's private clients? Who are some, if you're willing to tell me?
We predominantly, we have 7,000 to 10,000 clients worldwide. Predominantly, it is the largest commercial organizations in the world. So names, household names, Bank of America, Abbott Laboratories, Office Depot, These are our clients, in addition to most state and large federal governments.
So is it fair to say that you are the leader of your field?
We are the leading provider of research services, yes, sir.
Mr. Seifert, in your testimony when you mentioned Klinger-Cohen, and although the act does not specifically, strike the word specifically, does not explicitly identify federal CIOs as having any form of budgetary control or authority over IT resources, do you know of any federal CIOs that have explicit control over that budget authority?
There, as I mentioned in the testimony, the FBI recently granted that authority. Also in the budget proposal for FY 2006, it was proposed, although I don't believe it has been formally approved, that the Department of Justice CIO have budgetary authority over IT related just to information sharing as compared to the whole department. Otherwise, I would have to look at the different departments to see, but so far it's most do not appear to.
Okay. Are you familiar with HHS and in particular NIH?
To some degree, yes.
They're making strides, are they not, in the same fashion where we're going? They just haven't gotten there yet? Is that fair?
It would be a fair assessment.
You know, Ms. Kuntz, I couldn't help but think that I could get this wrong, but it's probably pretty close. I almost feel like I'm having a flashback here. 5 years ago, we sat just like this, and at the time, I believe it was Secretary Goss had just testified. He testified after you, but I remember, or it was before you. And I was asking him, what kind of authority and powers do you need, you know, now that you finally got this? And he said, you know, I don't need any, because the secretary is going to give me what I need to do to get this done. 5 years ago. And then when I look at these systems that we here at this committee has funded that have failed, and they were even outside of his ability to control, it pains me. I just want you to personally, it pains me, because 5 years ago is where I came up with this to give this line in budget authority, and I've been really patient, and you've been too. But we are, I think the committee is finally, I think we're about there. We really are, to actually do this, but I want to make sure we do it smartly and correctly. So I hate to be redundant, but I have to come back to this. If we're to give the CIO budget and line authority and say then to the CIO that you also now, these are your CIOs that work for the three undersecretaries. They don't work for the undersecretary. They work for the CIO. And then those regional CIOs report to that each CIO, right? So we've got them in a control function. At the same time, we want business practices to continue, Mr. Gartner. Okay? So whatever system is being created, whether it's, you know, we have in the works these competition going on with regard to our recovery, claims recovery. So we're going to find out which two pilot will do for a national rollout. Well, those are business practices. But help me here with, give me your counsel, give the committee our counsel on how we deliver line and budget authority to the CAO and how then we're going to have proper interface with the business office. What your thoughts are.
I think that's precisely the question. And one thing that I would like to emphasize about developing, about investing in and developing systems, about the importance of collaboration between the CIO and the business units. It's not necessarily that it's one or the other. It's really that it has to be a collaborative type of relationship. The business units are definitely the ones who have to identify the needs. They know what they want. And then the CIO has to be involved to make sure that this fits with the rest of the enterprise, make sure that advises them on different technological solutions, and sort of guides the implementation from an IT perspective. I think that what is more important than who precisely controls the funds is that you have that investment process, that you have a strong institutionalized investment process that brings together the right people to the table to make these decisions. And of course, that has to be supported by the head of the agency. The head of the agency has to be committed to making this process work.
All right. Mr. Peterson, in your counsel now to me, take private sector, mm-hmm. how they control the enterprise architecture, interface with business, and your counsel to say, this is how we can do it in the VA.
I agree heartily with the comments you just heard. The idea of transparency of the budget, of the money, of how it's being spent, where it's being spent, is critical for this. That's the first item that would come to mind. The second is, again, it is not, while the chain of command needs to clearly understand the change, they have to be very active in this. This is a very large, complex organization. I don't need to tell you all that, but how IT currently is structured is very complex today. There isn't a well-defined chain of command. It reports to different people. So bringing that together is itself an effort so that all of those individuals need to be involved and have that ability to change. So that quick change needs to be managed. That is a risk you'll have to manage as you go to that new operating model.
Mr. Michaud, do you have anything? All right. I'd like to thank all of you for your written testimony. And we may have a follow-on, not today, but as we proceed. And if we can call on you, I appreciate that. As I said earlier, that we're trying to build a model that we want to leverage into the rest of the departments of the federal government. More importantly, how do we do it first in the VA, and then others can examine what we do right and what we do wrong. And I appreciate your counsel. Thank you. The first panel is now dismissed. The second panel I would like to introduce is the Honorable Gordon H. Mansfield, Deputy Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs. He is accompanied by Daniel Cooper, the Undersecretary for Benefits, Veterans Benefits Administration, the Honorable Jonathan B. Perlin, the Undersecretary for Health, Veterans Health Administration, and Richard A. Wanamaker, Jr., the Acting Secretary for Memorial Affairs, National Cemetery Administration. Also at table is the Honorable Robert N. McFarland, the Assistant Secretary for Information Technology and Chief Information Officer, Department of Veterans Affairs. We also have Pedro Cadenas, the Associate Deputy Assistant Secretary for Cyber and Information Security, Department of Veterans Affairs. I have a name that a lot of people butcher, and I think I just butchered somebody else's name.
Cadenas.
Cadenas? I apologize. You can call me Buyer. I would do... Secretary, your complete written statement will be made part of the official record, and you are now recognized for an opening statement.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm pleased to be here this morning to discuss the Department of Veterans Affairs' ongoing activities in the reorganization of our information technology programs. I would request also, sir, that the articles noted in the full statement also be included in the record. Mr. Chairman, I wish to acknowledge your continued interest in this area and thank you for your efforts.
Hold just a second. Which articles are you referring to? Which articles are you referring to that you're asking to be incorporated in the record?
The ones that are mentioned in my full statement, sir, that are summarized. I would ask that the full articles be included. These are the ones that deal with our medical records.
There's five of them.
And they've been presented to the recorder, sir.
All right. Hold on just a second.
Right here. Page 8.
If that creates a problem, we'll withdraw the request, sir.
Well, let me just share this with you, Mr. Secretary. What I'm going to try to get a control on here is the incorporation of so many outside journals and articles. And I just learned that one of our members on this committee asked that the independent budget be made part of an official record, and we exploded the cost of the production of a record because of how large it is. And it really wasn't something that really was necessary. So let me just
As a compromise, I would propose that I would withdraw that request, and then with your permission, I would send copies of those articles to the members of the committee. Not require
that's,
them.
That sounds like a wonderful, thank you, request. You may proceed.
Yes, sir, and my apologies for the problem. As I said, sir, I wish to acknowledge your continuing interest in this area and thank you for your efforts to aid our evolution in this important arena. In fact, I would say that this truly has been a bipartisan effort by this committee in an effort to move us forward in the area of IT technology for the VA. The size and scope of VA's mission demand the judicious use of all means at our disposal. Information technology has proven to be a valuable tool in a number of important aspects of our business, and it holds great promise for increasing our capacity to perform for America's veterans. I want to emphasize that IT is a tool to be utilized as an important aid to allow us to carry out the Department's reason for existence, to deliver services and benefits to our nation's veterans. Today, we are nearing the end of a fiscal year in which we will provide health care to 5.2 million veterans out of 7.1 million who are enrolled in our system. We will provide monthly compensation and pension benefits to over 3.5 million veterans and beneficiaries. Also, we will work with over 500,000 veterans or family members to provide education benefits and 95,000 service-disabled veterans through our VOC rehab programs. We are also approaching 100,000 burials in our National Cemetery Administration facilities. These large numbers are made up of individuals who have earned the benefits we are charged with delivering. One of the first considerations I believe we have to these millions of veterans is to do no harm. By that I mean we must recognize that our current IT system is working and we are performing in providing those benefits. One of the reasons we are performing is because over the past decade plus, we have decentralized our system, as I explained in my submitted testimony. One result of that decision was that we did gain effectiveness. However, I recognize that that effectiveness has come with a loss of many efficiencies, and I agree that they must be regained. As a part of the need to regain some efficiency, the VA must also recognize that we have reached a point in time where we must move towards standardization in these activities. Dr. John Goss, the first IT Assistant Secretary and CIO, started the move towards reorganization. His efforts resulted in some progress towards a one VA enterprise architecture, effective project review and approval process, modernization of the telecommunications infrastructure, implementation of an effective cybersecurity program for the VA, and a move towards consolidating control over IT budgets, expenditures, and personnel. When Mr. McFarland came to the VA in 2004, he recommended it, and I approved, that we needed an outside consultant to review the VA IT organization and activities with the goal of giving us an as-is, that is, an existing view of the organization, and some proposals on recommendations for change. That activity was performed by Gartner Consulting, whose testimony has been presented by Mr. Michael Peterson, the Managing Vice President. This assessment was to help us enhance the effectiveness of VA's IT by first baselining how it operates today, then developing organizational models that increase VA's IT value in terms of greater efficiencies, economies of scale, and added business value, and finally charting the path VA IT can follow to deploy its new organizational model to truly deliver value. This assessment, as you noted, was completed in May of 2005. We are currently assessing alternative management structures, and the recent organizational assessment has provided important input. We understand that any changes must serve to increase our performance on behalf of veterans in a way ensuring no interruption of services to them. We are committed to organizing and managing our IT resources wisely and prudently, and look forward to this committee's continued support. Basically, Secretary Nicholson, after the briefing from Mr. Peterson, asked me to review recommendations with the CIO and the undersecretaries of the administrations and come up with a recommended model for him to make the final decision. I believe that the federated model is the best answer for VA at this point, in that it will produce the shortest return on investment. VA's size and the scale of its mission make it unique. While centralization of IT application and system development should be the long-term goal, it is not a prudent near-term solution based on the current culture and the ability to manage significant change. The federated approach includes high-level management, budget control, and comprehensive oversight of application and systems development within the CIO's office. This will significantly strengthen the VA's ability to deliver high-risk, high-value application development projects. This is the first step, and will start breaking down the stovepipes, moving us closer towards one VA. And finally, I have directed each administration to realign and reorganize the methods by which they do application and systems development and reorient those activities based on industry standard best practices. This will ensure proper planning, design, integration, and standardization of requirements are followed throughout the department as we build our next generation systems and applications as one VA systems to better serve our veterans. And I might note in closing that the CIO will have management oversight and budget decision authority. Two issues I'd like to address include, number one, resources. That issue has been brought up, and I would say that this Congress and the administration have been generous with the VA for funding IT projects. And I believe that it's not an issue of dollar resources as much as it is qualified personnel that we need to be able to get into this organization and help us design, manage, and run these programs. We also recognize that right now we cannot do it from inside, and as we move forward towards a change, we're going to need outside help, and we're planning on that. And the last point I would make is one that's mentioned in the Gartner report, and that is that we do have a highly motivated workforce in the administrations that want to deliver services to veterans, and we'll get in line with a proper plan that's properly explained and that they have a part in designing and moving forward. Thank you very much for this opportunity, Mr. Chairman, and I look forward to answering your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. I took this job with I can choose one word to describe the mission when I took over this job as chairman of the committee. Accountability. Accountability, accountability, accountability. People will demand it on this committee, will demand it equally of the administration or any of the advocates on behalf of veterans. Why did you hire Gartner Consulting?
At the point in time we made the decision to hire them, we decided that Mr. McFarland, as a brand-new Assistant Secretary for Information Technology, and I as a brand-new Deputy Secretary, looking at the situation we had in hand and in discussions with the then-Secretary, acknowledged that we needed to look at this total IT structure, what it was doing, what it was not doing, and make arrangements to make changes for it. We wanted to bring in somebody from the outside that could take an outside view of it and give us some information on where they saw us, the as-is picture, and also make some recommendations on where they thought we might want to go. And Mr. McFarland is the person that was put in charge of that and followed up on that mission.
And why that specific consulting firm?
I'll turn that over to Mr. McFarland since he's the expert in this area.
Well, sir, Gartner and the firm which they acquired, which was Meta, is known throughout the industry as having a unique set of qualifications. Primarily, I was interested in someone that didn't have a vested interest in what we did and how we organized ourselves and what the outcome was. Gartner nor Meta have any businesses that are related to integration of products or selection of products and tools. So I was interested in an independent attitude. I also wanted a fresh set of eyes. Everybody in the VA has an opinion about IT. I wanted a fresh set of eyes, and that was the best fresh set of eyes I could find at the time. And
what was the cost of the contract?
The contract was, I believe, sir, somewhere between $4.5 and $5 million, I believe, best of my recollection.
Secretary Mansfield, what makes an effective CIO?
Someone that, number one, is knowledgeable and understands information technology, understands what it can do as a tool. Somebody who is able to look to the future and in this fast-changing arena be able to anticipate some of the changes or be able to move with the changes. And then somebody who's dedicated to ensuring that these activities go forward in the best way possible.
You would concur with this statement that this is the 101, that IT is an enabler for you to accomplish your mission in an effective manner, correct?
Yes.
And in order to have a good enabler, you have to have a one architecture. Would you concur with that?
Yes.
So it is extremely important, whether you choose a centralized approach or a federated approach, that we maintain a one architecture, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Let me, Secretary, may I turn to your three undersecretaries for a moment?
Pardon me, sir.
May I turn to your three undersecretaries for a moment for questions?
Yes, sir. That's what they're here for.
What would be the concern of the three of you of a centralized approach whereby we give a line and budget authority to the CIO? What are the positives of that approach, and what are the negatives of that approach with regard to centralized? Recognizing the testimony that was just had before you took to this table, and that testimony was what you presently do is not mirrored anywhere. So give me your counsel.
Dr. Pearl.
Whoever wants to go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to comment on that. First, let me acknowledge the positives of either centralization or a federated approach. We are one VA. We should have seamless interoperability between benefits and health and commemoration of veterans, period. We should have an architecture that supports and facilitates that, and I actually agree that the control of funds within the Office of Information Technology will allow us to coordinate our projects and realize an enterprise architecture that delivers that. My concern about the centralized really relates to our history as well as the experience of health information technology in the United States. Health information technology is not pervasive. Less than 20% of healthcare providers, certainly hospitals, have health information systems. And certainly VA has been hailed for its exceptional performance in delivery of high-quality healthcare facilitated by health information technologies. In fact, this month's issue of Healthcare Papers in Canada, an entire issue was dedicated to understanding the improvement, the transformation of VA. It recognized the health information technology as a supporting technology, and it recognized further the performance measurement, the accountability. Sir, you asked about accountability. Our performance is our accountability, our performance and fulfillment of our mission of high-quality healthcare services. We've had a history of a centralized health information before. In fact, before this very committee, the Inspector General testified, did a fly-off between one centralized and one decentralized program. Ultimately, it was the centralized one that had failed. Failed because it had characteristics that were similar to some of the shortcomings of four core FLFs. Didn't engage the end user. So with all due respect to what I've just heard in terms of testimony and with absolute cognizance toward health information in the United States and the experience of healthcare executives and chief information officers in healthcare, I support the consolidation of the infrastructure, the generic architecture, the enterprise architecture. But the attachment of development to the clinicians, to the end users, is the defining characteristic and has been reported in healthcare papers, among other journals, as the key feature of the success of the health information system in VA. So in the federated model, I think we gain the efficiencies but preserve that unique aspect of the information system that allows and has demonstrated VA's ability to deliver high-quality care to veterans.
Admiral Cooper.
Essentially, I would say that the devil is in the details. In my organization, we essentially have a line to me, a centralized process within VBA. In my opinion, I could acclimate to whatever the decision was made. The whole execution is dependent upon the agreements that we have and how we work that. My concern is occasionally I have so many people that in the budgetary aspects of it, if at times I have to use money, then working, not having full control of the budget. However, again, that is something that can be worked out.
Mr. Watermark.
The federated system, National Cemetery Administration, we're a federated, centralized system now, and we were able to function. Our business processes and that are all support the CIO. So we are currently, as the smallest budget, we are currently working under that in that system. So it's going to enable us to continue to enhance benefits and service delivery to our nation's veterans and their families.
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Perlin would like to add another point, if he may.
I think you asked for the pros and cons of the two models, and I was very taken by the testimony where it supported the thesis that I just offered. It was said that one of the risks is a lack of investment in the activity. That singularly has been the disconnect in the clinical community in terms of getting health information technologies to work. Maintaining that connectivity, I think, is one of the key features that is why I recommend the federated model.
Secretary McFarland, if we were to give you line and budget authority, how do you place at ease the three undersecretaries that you're not going to stymie innovation, their ideas? I mean, there's a budget. There's only so many dollars. But you're part of a team, and when we're now going to heed counsel, that you've paid a lot of money for. And he talked about the importance of collaboration between the business and the CIO. How do we achieve in a central model that will place the three undersecretaries at ease?
Well, I believe in, no matter which model you choose, a key factor has to take place, and that is a customer orientation. I've spent 33 years in the information technology sector, and I am a full believer and have seen this environment be successful, where you have a customer mentality. IT is a tool. It's a business enabler. It serves its customers. IT should first serve the veteran in this organization, and it should second serve the employees and the employees of the administrations. If the users are not served, then IT fails. So any IT organization that I've ever headed up or will ever head up will have a customer mentality that says that the people we serve every day and supply power to, supply technology to, are the customers. They are the people that we have to deliver services and technology that make their business applications work. We have to take input from them on what's required. They are the experts. IT itself is not a business application. IT is a tool, and it can only be enabled if you're able to serve the customer. Candidly, I haven't always seen a customer mentality in the VA in the 18 months I've been here. And I believe we have to first and foremost take 6,000 IT people out there, no matter what they're doing or where they're serving, and get them to understand that IT and their participation is about serving the customers, the veterans, and the employees.
All right. That was pretty hard. We're well aware of, as we roll out in more areas, the patient medical records issues. I mean, those are all meant to be customer friendly at the same time, how we deliver and improve quality care. So, as Dr. Perlin would come up with an idea, right, or roll out into another vision, your job would be to make sure that it fits the architecture, right, in hardware and software, right? So you got to put a check in the box for that under a centralized approach.
Yes, sir.
Right? Not that you're the guy that's to tell him, no, it cannot be done. Or if you say it can't be done, that's a issue that's got to be resolved then between Secretary Mansfield and the Secretary, right?
Well, under either model, you have to be able to do this. Under either model, you have to be able to agree that anything the user wants you to build or wants you to run has to be able to meet the enterprise architecture. It has to be able to fit within the one VA approach to delivering services. Our job in either model is to advise the administrations and their constituents exactly what will fit and what won't fit.
Okay.
And then sit down and negotiate, how do we change a specification? How do we move a design to make it fit? That's a collaborative effort. It has to be done that way.
All right. Mr. Rochow?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have one question for Mr. Mansfield. I realize that the VA is still in the process of securing IT assets and restoring information systems and communication in the Katrina-affected area. And this may be too early for the question, but do you have any preliminary lessons learned on improving the IT system at VA, and how would IT reorganization have improved or hindered efforts during this disaster?
Yes, thank you for that question, sir. I would make a couple of introductory comments and then turn it over to the experts here. But I do know the one lesson, and we do have a lessons learned group out of our Readiness Operations Center that is currently in the process of coming up with a total lessons learned for everything in this operation, as we do every time we go through one of these exercises. One lesson learned is that our backup communication systems were not able to do the job, and we need to go forward and find something better than we had and get that on site and be able to use that so we can maintain communications. One of the aspects of our system, though, is fortunately, because of our planning, because of our training, we have folks out there that have been through this and were able to operate on their own, even if communications was interrupted from a certain point. The other part of it is dealing with records, and I'll turn that over to Dr. Perlin, is that in general we were able to make the move in time to be sure that any of the veterans in that affected area, no matter where they moved to, were able to the practitioners were able to get access to those records. However, it does raise one issue that is a problem in our system, and that is that it oftentimes, and again in these, as I say, decentralized operations, each one doesn't fit across the whole system. And that's where we need to go, where instead of having to work a special fix each time, we can ensure that across the total system those records are interoperable. And I would ask Dr. Perlin to comment on that, and then Mr. McFarland after that.
Thank you, Secretary Mansfield. And Congressman Michaud, thank you for the question. Actually, I have in front of me two articles from today. One, Katrina shows need to computerize records, Orlando Sentinel, talking about how effective having electronic health records were. And similar article from Government Computer News, Agency IT provides relief after Katrina. Both comment on VA's effectiveness to meet the mission of serving veterans, ultimately our mission, not an IT mission, a mission of patient care. Because those records could be made available to the entire system, being hosted at another facility even after New Orleans came offline. I think to me, the deputy mentioned one important improvement, the backup of communications. Henceforth, we'll have satellite uplinks and appreciate the collaboration with our Office of Information Technology in establishing those at Biloxi and Jackson in the middle of the crisis to provide broadband communications. The second is that
I want you to correct me if I'm wrong. There's no single data repository for all of these records. Would that not be correct?
That's
correct, is it not?
Yeah. That is correct.
Okay. So when a patient was transferred directly from, whether it's New Orleans to Houston or Biloxi to Jackson, somebody had to back up a tape. So when that patient was taken directly to Houston, Houston couldn't come online, show a doctor, here's what the medical record is, that it had to be backed up and inserted.
No, that record would have been, sir, available had there been connectivity between New Orleans and Houston. Under the circumstance, the latest footprint, the most recent data, was acquired during the storm. In fact, that's, I think, one of the take-home lessons, is that the facility could continue to operate independently. Let me turn to Mr. McFarland in terms of our corporate repository.
It is true that in order to get the records from New Orleans to Houston, we did have to take a tape from New Orleans, bring it to Houston, install a configuration that was equal to the New Orleans configuration, and then bring it up. One of the initiatives that Dr. Perlin's people and myself have been working on some 2 months now, 2.5, 3 months now, is the concept of regional data processing centers, so that we can get to a point where these records will not have to be moved by tape, that they would be accessible anywhere that within a region that a veteran would be able to go. But yes, currently today, there are different instances, different configurations based on medical centers, yeah. But there is a process in place to change that.
All right, Mr. Michaud, I want to thank you for yielding to me, because that's a prime example of why I'm hesitant on a federated approach, because we think that this is all out there, but it's really not if you don't have the word quote, connectivity. I yield back,
sir,
to the gentleman. I want to thank you.
Sir.
That's a good point, Mr. Chairman. Actually, that was going to be my follow-up question. Is there a central place where there is a backup, and if so, where is that, or do you envision that being so?
Go ahead. Answer. Go ahead. You answer. Talk about Martinsburg.
Sir, there is backup of corporate data nationally. It's not, it doesn't integrate as one seamless record at this moment. The project that Mr. McFarland described, the health data repository, will allow it to operate as one seamless health record. The reason it does that is not because we willfully wanted to have different instances of VISTA. The reason it is, as it is now, is entirely an artifact of history. Even 10 years ago, let alone 20 years ago, one didn't think in terabytes of data or national data files. It was really quite miraculous to stand up one hospital on one system. And in fact, as they evolved over time, there was differentiation. The task before us, and Mr. McFarland and I are absolutely in lockstep agreement on this, is that there is one consistent instance of the system of the electronic health record. And it's that which allows, in this really imminent next generation of the health data repository, one seamless record across the United States.
Sir, if I may add a follow-up to that, to the chairman's point. It's my belief in the federated model that we're talking about and looking at and going and recommending to go forward with that the issue you brought up would be solved because there would be one operational system that would be under the control of the CIO across the whole VA. And that would take care of not only the problem with VHA, but it would, when we get to the final point, also give us one VA where these where the veterans' records would be accessible across the system. So in the model that I'm looking at and proposing, we would have that solution, sir.
I want to follow up on that question. So what would happen if we had a terrorist attack and it took out that system? What would happen as far as the records?
The national system or
yes,
a local system?
The national system.
Well, first off, sir, we would never have a single instance of any system. I believe we will be able to put those records, that national system, in multiple locations and have a mirror image of those at all times so that no matter whether we lose any specific site, we will be able to recover immediately from the backup site. And that's a mirroring effect. You don't want it to be anything except a mirrored image.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Chairman, Dr. Perlin had mentioned a couple of articles. Do not need them for the record, but if he could provide the committee with those articles, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Michaud.
Thank you.
Mr. Villarakis.
This is not, I guess, considered a very sexy subject. It's high profile, et cetera. And yet we've got a room full of people here. I mean, to me, that's very meaningful. There's concern in this area. There's a lot of interest in this area. And I'd like to say there's a lot of frustration in this area. Mr. McFarland, Mr. Secretary McFarland, I guess you're secretary, right? Deputy Secretary, whatever. Under the federated model that Mr. Mansfield and others have talked about, putting that into effect, you would be in charge, as it was just said, I guess. Would you have the adequate authority to be able to do what is necessary to be done? Referring now again, I don't know whether Mr. Kuntz is still in the room, referring again to the challenges that you mentioned, the implementation practices, the obtaining relevant resources, the collaboration, et cetera. Would you have the adequate authority? Now, I know you guys work next to each other and you probably go to lunch together and you're friends and as well you should be. But can you be honest with us?
As long as I have what I would consider, and this may not be the right government word, but I'll use it anyway, as long as I have veto power over the way money is spent on IT infrastructure and IT projects.
Well, how about if money is spent for money which may be allocated to IT, but is not being proposed to be spent for IT, is being used for any other purposes?
Well, then, would that be the case, then I would not have the control, no. But I don't believe that is the intent of either model. if I understand what we're working on.
No, I'm sure it's not the intent, officially the intent. What happens now? You have money allocated to IT, and is all of it being spent on IT? I dare say, according to what staff tells me, it is not.
I do not have visibility into all of the money being spent today, and as to whether it is completely spent on IT.
Should you not have that authority?
I definitely should.
You should have that authority. And you would not have under the model that is being proposed by the VA, would you?
No, I believe I could have it under either model. I don't have it today, but I could have it under either of the models that are proposed here.
Well, I should think that it's not a matter of could have. I think it should be a matter of should have or will have based on the way legislation is crafted.
Yes, sir.
The VA has spent, $500 million, whatever what the figure was for the consultant that we talked about earlier. The VA disagree with the consultant's recommendations, as I understand it. The piece of legislation which the committee is crafting is consistent with the consultant's recommendations. How do you feel about that?
Sure, I would say that.
Well, all right. I was asking Mr. McFarland, but I'd like to hear from you too, Gordon.
Sure, I would say that we have agreed with one of the options, and the consultant, as requested, came up with a number of options, and we believe that based on his input plus other input, that the one that we've chosen is the best one for the organization.
So are you saying the consultant?
We didn't say that you have complete control and you'll run this. We said we want you to make recommendations. We've taken those recommendations inside, and as I mentioned, at the Secretary's direction, we've had numerous discussions with the CIO and the administrations and come up with what we have.
So the consultant suggested a number of options, and these centralized model, which is going into the legislation, is one of them, but the federated model, and
I believe his testimony that he presented here indicates that those two are the preferred models.
Mr. McFarland, what say you?
I believe that I can support a federated model based on the concept that the very first thing we need to do is get our arms around the infrastructure. The reason we have stovepipes today is because the infrastructure is divided among the administrations. There is no collaboration. There is no joint use. There is none of that today. Yeah. And that is the primary reason for the stovepipes.
And would the federated model be consistent with that particular status quo?
The federated model would solve that. The centralized and the federated model would solve that issue. The other thing, candidly, that I have to look at as a political appointee is I have a limited amount of time to pour what I call concrete with good rebar. And that is that what can I do quickly in my 3 years left here that I can do to make sure that we make change that stays here? And certainly the infrastructure is the quickest return on investment.
Which model would you prefer, sir? You are a political appointee.
In your personal opinion?
In my professional opinion.
Personal, professional, any kind of opinion.
I support what the consultant said. That being said, it is the Big Bang. And the Big Bang has a great amount of risk to it. And at the direction of the Secretary and the Deputy.
Are you a lawyer, Mr. McFarland?
Pardon me, sir?
Are you a lawyer?
No, sir, I am not a lawyer.
Well, you know how to dance around these questions.
Not trying to dance, sir. I'll be honest and tell you, in my professional opinion and my personal opinion, the centralized option is the best thing in the long run for the VA.
Okay.
I'm also a realist and know that we have to take this thing a step at a time. There are no lights.
Okay. That's good. I really appreciate your adding those additional words. We have to take it a step at a time and whatnot. And I think it's important that the committee understand. I know that the chairman understands that we don't want to do any harm here. we don't want to cause more problems. And we understand also, or we should understand, or hopefully we understand correctly, that you're on the line and you know this stuff better than we do. But, you know, we have concerns. The major VA IT investments that have failed in the past. Who was, you know, the questions, who was in charge of the following programs? VetsNet, Core FLS, Vista. $2 billion down the drain that could have gone to health care, Mr. Secretary. I understand the CIO was not in charge. Who was in charge? Who's currently in charge of management of these programs? We can get answers from you, but these things have happened. Now, there's a level. We've already said great things about the VA. We've commended you. Frankly, I felt like standing up and applauding you on the work that you've done on Katrina and what you and your help on 9/11 back in 01, et cetera. But there are a lot of failures here. And so there's a lack of credibility, I would say. And Dr. Perlin, you know, you want to put up your hand. You're a doctor, and you care about health care. And you know my concern. I've chaired the Health Committee on Energy and Commerce for 10 years on health care, chaired the committee here at one time, very much concerned with it all. There, by God, the question that Mr. Machado asked, that should not be had to reconfigure the Houston computers in order to get to be able to use that tape? What's wrong? There's something wrong with that scenario. Had to reconfigure at this point in time, as long as we've been into. It's frustrating, gentlemen, and I'm going to ask on behalf of. I'm vice chairman of the committee. I've already co-sponsored the legislation, but I'm going to ask that we sit down with you all, and that you be yielding. That you be yielding, that you're not going to be stubborn and say, hey, our model is the model that we want to go to, and we don't want to cooperate as far as a centralized model is concerned. But Mr. McFarland, who I think can see the forest for the trees, hopefully, has said that the centralized model is really the preferred one. He said he can work with both of them, I think, as I understand his paraphrasing his statements. But that's the better model. Now, should that model be twisted a little bit and whatnot to make sure that no harm is done? I suppose so. But we've all got to be open-minded on it. I've taken a lot of time, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for it. But I've sat in these meetings all through the years. We had our round table the other day. I just can't get over how little Estonia can do what they've done and how we can't even do it within one of our own departments. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Hsu.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm reading the GAO report, and I have one question, Mr. Chairman, is according to a memorandum dated back on August of 2002 from Secretary Principe, in that memorandum he talked about realigning to a central IT system. That was back in 2002. The GAO reported in September of 2002 that it would build credibility, it would achieve a one VA, it was bold, it was innovative, and that memorandum was signed in 2002. My question is, why hasn't it happened? And that was for a centralized system. Why?
I've only been here 18 months, so I didn't have the benefit of being here at that time, but I've done my best to look into the history. I believe the intent was there. With all due respect to my predecessor, I do not believe it was executed on. It's as simple as that.
I guess from the VA side, this was signed by the former secretary. What has been done to move it to a centralized system? And I realize, you know, Mr. Mansfield, you've only been there for a short time as well. I don't know if Dr. Perlin or...
Sir, the effect of that memo was carried out with a change, I believe, of 97 personnel being, in effect, dual-line, reporting both to the CIO and to the administration head, and then further down the line. And as I mentioned in my oral statement, there was work done on the one VA enterprise architecture. There was a move towards project review that got the office of the CIO the ability to sign off before money could be authorized. There was a modernization of telecommunications infrastructure that Mr. McFarland finished, which is saving us millions of dollars. The implementation of an effective cybersecurity program. For the first time in history, VA has completed that and is certified, and a move towards consolidating control over IT budgets, expenditures, and personnel. And as I indicated, what Mr. McFarland and I were looking for when we asked for the outside consultant to come in was to look at, based on that change, where were we and what did we need to do to go forward so that we would have a plan, and then we could, inside the department, make a decision or make a recommendation to the secretary based on his final decision, then, as you said, sir, assume the responsibility and move forward.
I think if I might, Mr. Chairman, just follow up. Mr. McFarland, you said you've only been there 18 months. That's a year and a half. Did you make any attempt to try to move forward on this memorandum?
Well, as soon as I got my hands on the memorandums and the history is when I sat down with the new deputy and said, we are not where this says we were supposed to go. I think we need to get an understanding of where we are and then figure out how we get to go where we're supposed to go. And that's what generated the Gartner study. And, you know, it took me some time to get that contract awarded. We have our share of issues in the area of getting contracts, so it took some matter of months before I could actually get a contract out. So I apologize for having been here 18 months and not getting it done sooner, but I moved about as fast as I was able to, sir, candidly.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You know, Mr. Michaud, when you talked about what's been done in moving toward that direction of a centralized, I couldn't help but think there's also been a trip or a trip, a stumble, and a fall. And I would call the trip, the stumble, and a fall Core LFES, VetsNet, and Vista. And some of that was outside of control and responsibility. And so as we move toward this centralization, that there's not going to be a lot of finger pointing. We're going to know how we're going to make the system accountable. At this moment, I want to pause, and I think we need to get some input here from the Chief Information Security Officer. We've heard from the other three undersecretaries, and you work directly for McFarland. Now, we know that the Federal Information Systems Management Act gave an F on the report with regard to cybersecurity, and so we've got some pretty strong concerns here. And so if Congress were to move toward a centralized approach and follow the counsel of Gartner Consulting as opposed to Federated, so take Federated and flush it out of your mind at the moment. How do we improve the cybersecurity under a centralized approach?
Thank you for the opportunity to be here, sir. Tremendous opportunities in regards to a centralized approach, as you've been talking about, sir. It with me working for Mr. McFarland, it allows me to go out there with my teams, establish a more formalized process, applying hardening systems to ensure configuration baseline, change control boards, et cetera, and bringing in what I would call good systems engineering from a security point of view to go out there and do that to these systems out there to ensure hardening, perimeter in-depth, defense in-depth approach.
So the CIO, your boss, now has owns the people that for the three undersecretaries, and then owns those CIOs that go down regionally, right? And it continues to go down. Do you believe that the centralized approach will regain control or take this control away from these autonomous networks?
Well, sir, I've been there. I'm a newbie as well. I will have my third anniversary here in November. Yes, it will help in those areas, but what we have been doing is we have developed a tremendous collaboration effort with the community in working with us. The result of worms that we've experienced in the past have only applied or reinforced the need for that strong collaboration. The control that you're talking about, sir, that it will allow us to have, will allow us to act much quicker. A great deal of our success has been on kumbayas, shared accountability, working groups with the various communities out there, versus having that control, I can immediately engage and move out.
Well, if the Federal Information Systems Management Act report gave you an F,
wow. Yes, sir.
I mean, come on. Where are we now? We need to move out swiftly here. You have a question?
Sir, if I may.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead, Gordon.
I believe that the federated model that I'm proposing would give him exactly the same capability. He would be able to do it because it would be responsible to the CIO.
Well, I asked my particular question because I think we're about to follow the centralized approach that you paid $5 million to a consultant that's given us counsel here. And I know, Mr. Secretary, you're under tremendous pressures. You got three undersecretaries that you also have to work with and you've developed relationships with. And be very frank with you, I don't have much patience because I've been doing this for 6 years. 6 years. And I've watched the system, and all along it's been, Steve, let this mature, let it massage, we'll move in that direction, incremental approaches. I'm pretty exhausted, Mr. Secretary.
Well, Mr. Still Chairman, sorry to hitchhike upon your comments. This trying to set up an IT system that will be able to accomplish all of these things the way it should in today's high-powered electronic mechanical world is significant. But it's even more so now because of the threat of terrorism, because of natural disasters and everything of that nature. So, boy, we should all have lost our patience, not knowing what may happen tomorrow. There was some banging or something we heard a few minutes ago, and I turned around and I asked Rebecca, what is that? She said, Metro? I don't know, is that what it is? Metro? What goes underneath here? So it was the Metro. But anyhow, anymore, that's what's happening. You know, we hear something like that, and we wonder what in the world is going on. But you seem to be intent on the federated model. The committee seems to be intent on the centralized model. Hopefully, there will be something in between, or at least some of your ideas will certainly should be used to be part of any legislation that comes out. But what I'm wondering, Mr. Chairman, is if they're working towards a federated model, if they're full speed ahead on a federated model, and we in the meantime are thinking another way, and the time that it takes, of course, to get through the process through this very unwieldy Republic system of ours becomes legislation. Are they going to be expending dollars on a system that will be moot basically once we finally have?
Well, that's a good question, and I think this is one that we can also entertain offline. But just playing this out, my counsel to Mr. Secretary would be cautious for you to proceed. Because there is such strong bipartisan support on this committee for a centralized approach,
that might be helpful.
We will immediately go to council with the Senate, where we also know that the House Appropriations staff, along with the Senate Appropriations staff, is also embracing, I believe, a centralized approach. So there is time between now and when we leave, potentially November 18th, that we could actually send this to the President. So, Mr. Bilirakis, your point is well made, and I think Mr. Mansfield has heard the response. I yield back to Mr. Bilirakis.
Well, thank you, sir. I would just hope, Mr. Mansfield, that you would, you know, let's be logical and reasonable in all this, knowing that this may be coming down the pike, which hopefully suggestions from you all, which might sort of squirm it a little bit, you know, and change it a little bit and that sort of thing. I don't know where it might be needed and acceptable. That in the process of what you're doing with your federated model, you take all that in consideration. As I understand the federated model, it probably would be right on the same path as a centralized model anyhow. So hopefully we're not talking about any waste of dollars or waste of effort that would then have to be undone later on.
Yes, sir. In fact, the Gartner report makes the point for the centralized model that it cannot be done in one step, that it will require multiple steps, and the federated model is a part of that process, I would believe, or can be made so.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Show, do you have
just a comment, Mr. Chairman. My question to Mr. McFarland wasn't to point fingers. It was more or less to find out why they have not moved in that direction, because having been involved for a number of years at the state level, if sometimes individuals who are running programs, if they do not like the particular program, they'll do everything they can to make sure that it doesn't happen. So that was my questioning, and I agree with you 100% on the accountability, and we definitely have to have accountability and make sure that the end users are involved in doing it, because they're the ones that are going to have to use the system. And I know that you will hold them accountable. And actually in Maine, Mr. Chairman, we have a saying, and hopefully you don't take it disrespectfully, but knowing you just a short time, I have known you, you're like a pit bull. When you get something, you hold on to it, and you hold that accountability. And I think we definitely will get that accountability. Looking forward to working with you, making sure that we have a system that that everyone can live with, and it will be accountable not only to the taxpayers, but also to members of Congress. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I appreciated the candor of the gentleman from Gartner Consulting in that, you know, it's almost like, well, of course this isn't going to be out in the private sector because this is for profit, right? And if you're a government enterprise, you don't have to worry about it. You do budget submissions. Who wants to be against spending in veterans arena, right? And so trying to bring efficiencies to these processes, I mean, it is our responsibility. You know, there are a couple of really large procurement contracts with regard to IT that are sitting out there. Paris and Peaches. Peaches and Paris.
Peaches, you got.
So if we're about to move into this, tell me where we are on these two large procurement contracts that could involve billions of dollars. How are we going to?
We're going to need them.
What are we doing?
Well, we are, sir, we are currently operating under what's called Peaches 2, which is a common hardware and software procurement vehicle that we use to buy all of our hardware and software throughout the VA. It's based on a set of standards. It has served us reasonably well, but it's due to be redone because it's about to hit its cap, and we'll have to implement a new, what I call Peaches 3, next year. I've been intimately involved with procurement and have made it clear what I want out of Peaches 3, which is different than what we've had in Peaches 2. I want to get a lot more standardization because it appeared as Peaches 2 evolved, just about anyone could select something and get it on Peaches, and that allowed them to buy it. And that did not serve us as well as I would have hoped in our standardization efforts. So Peaches 3 will produce a much stronger standardized environment. Under any move that we make from an IT reorg, I will control that hardware and software buy. And I will see that we get standardization and that we get common configurations out there through this contract.
I don't know where you are in the letting of these contracts. Should Secretary McFarland, should we not let these contracts until this legislation is in place so that you've got this line of budget authority?
We're still going to need this stuff.
We are still working under Peaches 2 and will through a part of next year. I believe Peaches 3 isn't due to come online or be let, if you will, the contract be let until about the middle of next year. Okay. So we're at a point where nothing that you would do between now and then would get in the way of any aspect of trying to modernize that procurement vehicle.
All right. Admiral Cooper, the Navy uses a process where the fleet expresses a need for a new system, provides requirements, and the system's commands work with the Pentagon and the fleet users to build a system that meets the fleet's needs. The process is very structured, has rigorous reviews at many levels in the acquisition chain of command, does it not? Do you similarly see a structure and would you like to see a system very similar to that within the systems that you presently control?
Yes, sir.
I'm going to give it to you. This hearing is now concluded.